Well, we've got a very busy Monday ahead here on Issues Etc. We're going to start out talking about Luther since it is Reformation Week. Tomorrow is officially the day, but many churches recognized the Reformation Sunday yesterday. Do we still need, not Martin Luther per se, he's gone, but do we still need a Martin Luther today? We're going to be talking about that subject with Dr. Harold O.J. Brown in just a few minutes here on Issues Etc. And then in the second half hour of the program, my goodness, we've got audio open lines. Michael J. Fox did an interview with ABC's this week's George Stephanopoulos. Now, he ranged all over the place responding to charges from radio talk show host Rush Limbaugh. We're going to deal with more pertinent, more important matters of that Michael J. Fox interview having to do with his support for Amendment 2 and those candidates who have supported embryonic stem cell research. Let you listen to it. We'll stop and start it there in the second half hour. There's also an AP story on the Senate race here in Missouri, which does dovetail with the Amendment 2 issue. A CNN report on South Dakota's abortion ban. It looks as though, no one can say these things for sure, but it looks as though South Dakota may actually vote to ban abortion entirely with the exceptions of the life of a mother. And then what happens? We'll hear a CNN report on that and some other audio during audio open lines in the second half hour of Issues Etc. going into the second hour itself. At 4:10, there was a bet made last week here on Issues Etc. I am now owed a bottle of, I guess I could probably name it, but Wild Horse. I think I'm going to ask for some Pinot Noir, which is what we drank at Rod Zwanitzer's house when we were in Dearborn, Michigan, for an Issues Etc. Reformation tour. Pastor Joel Baisley and Rod Zwanitzer will have to split the cost of that bottle because the Cardinals won the World Series, as everyone in the universe now knows. We'll be talking also with Rick Horton, a former Cardinals, Dodgers, and White Sox pitcher, about the World Series win just for about 10, 15 minutes here on Issues Etc. At 4:30, we'll visit with the author of the book, Leaving the Left Behind. Keith Thompson will be our guest. And from 5:15 on through the end of the program today, Pastor Brent Kuhlman of Trinity Lutheran Church in Murdoch, Nebraska, will join us to talk about forensic justification. Now, don't think CSI. Don't think that guy with his little pin light walking all over the checking out the crime scene. It's a different sense of the word forensic, a slightly different sense. We'll find out what it really means to be declared righteous for Christ's sake, by grace through faith alone, in those last 45 minutes of Issues Etc. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can email us here in the studio as we come to you live this Monday, the 30th of October, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Dr. Harold O.J. Brown is a regular guest on Issues Etc. He's professor of theology and philosophy at Reformed Theological Seminary in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's going to be making a presentation later this week at a forum that is titled Called to Engage the Postmodern World. His essay is titled Why We Need a Luther. Dr. Brown, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be back.
Luther seems so far removed from us, both in time and geography. Is the first part of the 21st century in America that different from the first part of the 16th in Europe?
Well, and of course, in almost every measurable way, you could say there's a lot of difference. And yet, since the fact that the actors are all the same human beings, fallen people made in the image of God, there's a lot more similarity than you might think. At least that's what came to me when I was working on this particular topic.
Luther stands out as a giant in recent history for many reasons, but why do you think he's most significant, and why do you think, while we can't replicate the man, we need the man's ideas today?
Well, we certainly need the spirit. I think what you had at the end of the, let's say if you got into the 16th century, you know, the 1500s, well, the previous century had been started off very, very badly for Europe. They had had all sorts of problems. Constantinople fell to the Turks, and so the Eastern Church was really subordinated greatly to the Muslim power. But in the West, they had had tremendous confusion with the papacy. They started the century first with two popes, and they had three popes. And eventually all that was straightened out, and a sort of an apparent order was restored. But nevertheless, the whole way of dealing with the problems of sin and forgiveness and salvation had been so corrupted by several centuries of malfeasance, shall we say, that something rather dramatic was needed to bring Christianity back to the, you know, back to reality, shall we say. And of course, Luther apparently had a strong internal experience which liberated him to go and start talking about this. And he hit the crucial moment. You know, printing had begun. He had, unlike poor John Huss the previous century, he had a local protector who would, in fact, protect him. And, of course, that made a big difference.
Talk a bit about Pope Leo, the pope with whom Luther was required to deal, and what the circumstances of the church and, therefore, of Europe really were at that time.
Well, as you probably know, there had been a great deal of commotion in the 15th century, that is, in the 1400s, because of the three popes. You know, who can be the one chosen head of the church if you have three people claiming to be pope, and each of them with a considerable backing in several different, you know, various different countries backing one, and other countries backing the other. And so this was solved temporarily, at any rate, by the means of a general council. And the council that solved it, the Council of Constance, 1415, it brought in a single pope, put all the other three, sort of to say, in storage. And at the same time, however, it decided to suppress the first genuine burst of Reformation, which was John Huss. Now, you know, Huss, it turns out, when we study him a bit more, he had many of the same insights that Luther had. Namely, he wanted the worship to be brought into the language of the people. He wanted the scripture to be available. He wanted people to learn their catechisms and their language, which is Czech, and so on. And he also ultimately decided to try to offer communion in both kinds. Now, he didn't start out that way. He was rather slow, but he had approved that before he was killed. And so this Council of Constance, I'm sorry I got off the track talking about Huss, but the Council of Constance decided, as councils had been doing, that the real authority in the church was the General Council. But as soon as they appointed a new pope, actually he died rather soon, and his successor saw to it that there were no more councils of the sort ever going to come into existence. The pope was on top. And so, you know, you have a very falsely founded church that was telling people things that were hardly conducive to their salvation. And so Leo, as you asked me about Leo, Leo was a polished man, an elegant man, probably a rather kind man. He inherited the Vatican, which had been enlarged by his predecessor, Pope Julius II, who was the military pope, you know, usually shown on horseback with a sword. And he had managed to quiet down the rebellious French. The French were always a little rebellious in that church situation. And he had the Spanish coming in on his side. Spain was expanding tremendously. He had managed to kind of come to terms with the Renaissance. So the best Renaissance figures were working for him, the best, greatest Renaissance artists, and so on. And so everything looked good for him. But, of course, the fundamental practice of the church was rotten. And it was Luther who uncovered that.
So that's the proverbial calm before the storm. How is it that, by any judgment, 1517, you've got this single monastery monk, also a teacher in Wittenberg, deciding to put up for debate some theses on the practice of the sacrament of penance and on repentance. How does this spin into a Reformation that within 100 years has changed the theological and the literal landscape of Europe?
Well, of course, that's interesting that you say the landscape of Europe, because, of course, the Roman Catholic Church changed rather dramatically in its efforts to deal with the Reformation. They had their own Counter-Reformation Council of Trent, and so they were quite different after the Reformation from the way they had been before. But I think you have to say it was a case where you had a kettle that had been on the fire for a long time. It was extremely hot, but all of the stew was being hepped in by a lid, which was tightly clamped down, and Luther somehow pried the lid off. And, of course, you know, one of the dramatic things, his theses and then his early Reformation tracts, they were in England within 2 weeks. And you almost have to think that someone got on horseback and rode with them to England, changing horses, you know, every 30 miles or so.
So there were people other than Luther who are ready to recognize the significance of even the seemingly innocuous issues that he raised in 1517, Luther himself still considering himself a faithful servant of the Pope and son of the Church.
Yes, he didn't last very long that way, though, because when he saw how he was treated by the Pope, he quickly changed, you know, and shortly burned the Pope's bull under the oak in Wittenberg. However, yes, I think that there were so many things that were, fully established wrong. All sorts of things, the role of the monasteries, for example, as you know, this was still sort of the end of the feudal period, and they still had the custom when noble families would take their second sons and make so-called dedicated boys out of them. Pueri oblati, they would promise them at an early age to a monastery to get them out of the inheritance so as not to split the territory, you know, between more than one son, and also to avoid having to spend the money that they might otherwise have been spending, and so on. Clergy were quite distinct from the bulk of the population. You know, there was communion in one kind only, which had been that way for a couple of hundred years in the Western Church. They had the whole concept of the treasure. Well, essentially, what had happened in the Roman Catholic Church, it became harder and harder for anyone to be certain that he was saved. Now, because in order to be saved, you had to fulfill certain requirements to the letter. You had to repent in detail of every sin. You had to avoid committing any more sins after your complete confession and so on. And the requirements were so high that they were almost impossible to meet. And this, of course, is what drove Luther ultimately to his rebellion.
So the theological need for Luther's ideas, speaking here as a Lutheran clergyman now, to me seem quite obvious to the Church. But in what other senses, Dr. Brown, do we still need a Luther today? You mentioned early in our conversation at least the spirit of Luther. How do you mean that?
Well, I think Luther was, of course, very much committed to the truth. He was committed to the truth of the Scripture, to the truth of the Word of God. There are not a series of truths, at least not on this matter. There's only one truth, and he very, very much preached and extolled that. And this, of course, is what our whole society at the present time now is, you know, in an incredible bundle of lies. I mean, well, for example, I've just been dealing with the abortion issue again and again, and you know the abortion begins with the concept of a lie. We don't know when human life begins, and it carries on in the basis of all sorts of frivolous things, such as, four years ago, actually, I went down to Florida on the 6th of August of April and came to the door of my daughter's house, and she brought this little package and said, Dad, would you like to hold him? That was Alexander, who was at that point 4 days old, but he was 4 weeks early. You know, so he was still a legitimate target for abortion in the United States. We've had the great attacks on the trade towers, which are, of course, a horrible thing. They killed 3,000 people, but our doctors killed 4,000 the same day, and the day before, and the day after. You know, we're concerned about having millions of illegal immigrants, and that is a problem. But surely one reason why we have them is because we're killing our own people. You probably are very familiar with what's going on with so-called gay marriage. We don't don't even notice the fact that this is something that is contrary. Let's go back to the Torah, you know, to the Christian New Testament, even to the Quran. To almost every notable philosopher who dealt with this issue, to the laws of Hammurabi, to the Assyrian law codes, throughout the history of the world, all human experience is against this, and now it's being suddenly celebrated in at least several of our courts, Massachusetts and New Jersey for the moment. So we have a total lack of truth in the whole area, I think. What's going on in Iraq? You know, that's controversial issue, but I think we're short on knowing the truth there, too.
Dr. Harold O.J. Brown is our guest. He's professor of theology and philosophy at Reformed Theological Seminary in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's going to be making a presentation later this week at a forum titled Called to Engage the Postmodern World. I'll tell you about it in just a moment. His essay is titled Why We Need a Luther. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc., and we're coming to you live this Monday, October the 30th. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Well, the backdrop, and in many ways the stage itself, for many of the issues that you just rattled off, Dr. Brown, is this notion of postmodernism, when it comes to truth, I have my truth, you have your truth, some guy, the third guy, has his truth, and everyone is free to construct or deconstruct their own individual truth. So is our society, pervaded as it is by this view of truth, capable of dealing with any of the issues you mentioned?
No, not without a serious internal reformation, which would have to come by being, you know, the lines, of course, in Romans chapter 12, where you must be restored. Let's see, how does the line? It's 12:2. I can't immediately recall it to mind, but you know, you probably know what I'm thinking about. That we have to be totally renewed by the Word of God. And our whole thinking capacity has to be renewed, and it isn't new. You know, we have, we do live in a world something like Satan in Paradise Lost, where he says the mind is its own thing, and of itself can make a hell of heaven a heaven of hell. But that's not true. If you don't have a concept of true truth, then of course you cannot deal with reality, with true reality.
So, if at the very heart of Luther's spirit, in that very general sense, is not only a commitment to, but a way of thinking that would, in which postmodernism is literally unthinkable when it comes to truth, that truth is true in and of itself, how would you look for or listen for that Luther-esque voice in the public square today, Dr. Brown?
I think you have to listen a long time to hear it. Who do you know among current politicians who is willing to tell the truth on most of these subjects? If I might, I should say that I supported earnestly, very earnestly and vigorously, worked very hard for President Bush in both campaigns. But I'm very disappointed with what seems to me to be his inability to say the truth on a lot of subjects. I'm thinking perhaps about the idea of Islam, you know, as a religion of peace, which historically it isn't. If anyone knows history, how did Christianity spread for the first 300 years it was persecuted? And it spread nevertheless by martyrs, by the blood of the saints. You know? And Islam spread in the first 100 years all over much of the Near East and got way up into the northern part of France, not by pacifism and not by peacefulness, but by violence. I mean, that's a major historic fact, and yet we don't seem to be able to face it. And so we're not willing to look the problem that we face in the eye here, which is, will we be able to solve a problem that we don't look at? I don't know.
And at the same time, we have, even from within certain corners of Lutheran theological descendants, we have people who are saying, well, not only is Islam generally a religion of peace, but it is a religion that is not all that different from Orthodox Christianity, from the faith once delivered to the saints. And these are voices that are coming from within the church and sometimes even from within Luther's theological descendants.
Yes, well, I know that this is, I think, one of the things actually that shows that Christianity is the true religion of God, because it's only Christianity that is that merits the devil's efforts to have it undermined by its own its own leaders. Try that with Islam, for example. But yes, it is. You're right. We do not have a concern for truth. We don't have a concern for historical truth. We don't have a concern for philosophical truth. And of course, we are sort of trying to create our own world of thought, in which, as the devil said or Satan said in Paradise Lost, the mind is its own place. But the mind isn't its own place. Ultimately, we have to live in the real world. You know, one of the things you're probably aware of this, but we have totally obscured reality with regard to the horrible disease known as AIDS. Oh, here it's not a homosexual disease. No, it's a viral disease. That's true. But how does it get spread? And how did it get started? How did it get circulated? You know, we can't say because it might offend someone. But because we can't say it, we probably allow more and more people to be infected than otherwise might be.
One more question on Islam with only a minute before we let you go, Dr. Brown. Pope Benedict XVI very recently made some what seemed to me merely historical observations about Islam and its relationship to violence. And that controversy is still to some degree swirling in the Vatican and elsewhere. And it seems like we have come a long ways from the time when the Pope would have said Islam in Luther's day. He would have said it is a threat, and Luther would have said, well, for all the things I disagree with Pope Leo on, I will agree with him there.
Absolutely, yes, of course. As a matter of fact, there was a very dramatic threat that came in. You know, they attacked the Muslims, or the Turks besieged Vienna right at the time in the middle of the Reformation, 1529, I think, the year of the Marburg Colloquy. And so, I don't know, what was your statement to begin with, though?
Well, it just seems as though we have come a long way from the time when both Luther and Leo would have agreed that Islam is not only a far-flung from Christianity, but a threat to a Christian worldview, and now we have a hard time getting that kind of a statement even from the Pope.
Yeah, it seems that there is, well, the Pope did briefly allude to it, but then he said, I was just quoting someone else. You know, that's an easy way out, and he did not actually 100% apologize, but he backed off quite badly. There does seem to be a significant lack of courage, which is definitely one thing that Luther didn't lack. You know, he went to the Diet of Worms, where he faced all of the electors of the Holy Roman Empire. He faced the young Emperor Charles V, who had just become emperor. He faced the cardinals from the Roman Catholic Church. He was not quite alone, but almost alone there, and faced, you know, the whole might of the empire and the church to tell the truth, which he did.
Dr. Harold O.J. Brown is professor of theology and philosophy at Reformed Theological Seminary in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's going to be making a presentation later this week on the campus of Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis at a forum titled Call to Engage the Postmodern World. His essay will be titled Why We Need a Luther. For more information on this forum, it's November the 3rd and the 4th on the campus of Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis. Visit www.csl.edu. www.csl.edu. This forum is free and open to the public. It's titled Called to Engage the Postmodern World. www.csl.edu. Dr. Brown, thank you for being our guest.
Well, thank you very much, Pastor. I've enjoyed being with you.
Happy to have you. When we come back from this break, in the second half hour of the program, audio open lines. If you were watching yesterday, George Stephanopoulos had a rather lengthy interview with Michael J. Fox. The conversation ranged all over the place, but they kept coming back again and again to the issue of stem cell research and embryonic stem cell research and Michael J. Fox's support for candidates nationwide who are in favor of embryonic stem cell research. We're going to listen to portions of that interview between George Stephanopoulos on ABC's This Week and Michael J. Fox during audio open lines when we come back from this break. I'll react, and I'd like your reaction to 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. There's also an AP story on the Senate race in Missouri. And in South Dakota, it's hard to believe that this is actually occurring, but it is. In South Dakota, when the voters go to the ballot box, they're going to be voting to or not to totally ban abortion in that state, with the exception of a life of the mother. Who would have thought after 33 years of Roe? When we come back, we'll hear about that during Audio Open Line.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
It's never too early to begin teaching your kids or your grandkids the substance of the Christian faith. Are you looking for a children's book with real Christian scriptural substance? Hi, I'm Todd Wilkin. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for October is called The Apostles' Creed. It teaches the basics of the doctrine of the Trinity right at the level of your children or grandchildren. You can find The Apostles' Creed at either of the two Concordia Publishing House bookstores in the St. Louis area. One is on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton, the other at 3558 South Jefferson in the city. The Issues Etc. book of the month for October, The Apostles' Creed, is a great way to begin teaching your children the truths of the Christian faith. Visit either of those two locations, 3558 South Jefferson in the city, or on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. Look for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, The Apostles' Creed.
At least 20 handicapped newborn babies in the Netherlands were euthanized by Dutch physicians who said their lives were not worth living.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
This deadly mindset is fundamentally eugenic, in a sense, weeding out those lives that are less than perfect. It pressures parents of disabled newborns to have the children euthanized rather than care for them and be a burden to society. Similarly, legal abortion allows lives to be ended for the benefit of others. The only way to respond to this culture of death is to end abortion and support a culture of life.
Are you pro-life? Then visit our website at sba-list.org and discover how you can make a difference. I'm Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. Thanks for taking a stand.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, where values thrive, and online at thrivent.com.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Hebrews 13, verse 16 says, "Do not forget to do good and to share with others, for with such sacrifices God is pleased." I recall a study years ago that reported adults who have a well-developed personal faith had been involved as children in projects to help others. So you can imagine my big smile when my grandson emailed me the following. "Opa, I was in your office today. I understand you are in California. I was sorry to miss you. While I was in your office, I couldn't help but notice that you had piles of work that needed to be done. So I decided to take a seat in your chair and go to work. When I left the office, I was tired, but I left you with a clean desk. I was commanding significant attention. Just because I was in your office, people were very interested in everything I had to say, and boy, did I give them an earful. People lined up out the door. I did my best to answer their questions and make them happy. They all said it was refreshing to see youth in the president's office. I told them I was just keeping your chair warm. Ask Oma when you get home. She has the pictures. Travel safe. Love you, Christian."
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, online at thrivent.com. We do more than work. We work with a purpose.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Here in the second half hour, we've got audio open lines for your questions and your comments. This was an interesting interview Michael J. Fox gave to George Stephanopoulos. He's kind of been making the rounds in the media, but the longest and I think most in-depth interview that he did was with ABC's This Week and George Stephanopoulos. We'll be playing the better part of that interview, stopping and starting, getting my reaction, but I'm more interested in yours. Some of the things that Michael J. Fox has to say. Of course, he recorded an ad for several candidates nationwide, and these ads aired during the World Series here in Missouri. They aired during the actual Cardinals game. And here in Missouri, he supported Claire McCaskill. The issue of stem cell research, he didn't say embryonic stem cell research, but we'll get into that in this interview. The issue of stem cell research was one of the reasons that he said he was going to be supporting, insofar as he could, Claire McCaskill's election to Senate over Jim Talent. Well, there's been reaction all over the place, which has required a little bit more explanation. We'll hear what Michael J. Fox's explanation is for his involvement in the ads and other subjects pertaining to his appearance there on television. We'll also hear an AP story on the Senate race in Missouri. It mentions embryonic stem cell research, of course, and there's a CNN report on South Dakota's abortion ban that will be the subject of the voters' will coming up this next week in that state. It's audio open lines. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I just want to make sure we do this right. It is cut. Thank you. Cut to, we pick up the interview where George Stephanopoulos talked about why Senator Talent and Republican candidate Michael Steele of Ohio were upset with Michael J. Fox's ads.
Both the Steele campaign and the Talent campaign have said you're not being fair to them because they want to expand stem cell research too, they say, but it's adult stem cell research.
Right, and I agree with them on adult stem cell research. I mean, let's talk about what we agree on. I agree that we should have no human cloning. We're against that. We're against egg farming and you know, that notion. We agree on all that. The only thing is we would like to include embryonic stem cell research, which our scientists say has the best hope for cures and breakthroughs.
In the ad now running in Missouri, Jim Cavazel speaks in Aramaic. It means you betray me with a kiss. And his position, his point is that actually, even though down in Missouri they say the initiative is against cloning, it's actually going to allow human cloning.
Well, I don't think that's true. I don't, you know, I campaigned for Claire McCaskill. And so I have to qualify by saying I'm not qualified to speak on the page-to-page content of the initiative.
Now, before we go on, he's about to broach a subject that has also made the news this morning, and that is in this interview on Sunday with George Stephanopoulos. Michael J. Fox says, look, I recorded an ad for Claire McCaskill, but I haven't read the actual proposal that is Amendment 2, the actual amendment itself to the Missouri Constitution. He is operating, and listen, I want you to listen carefully to what he said and what he has to say from this point on. He's operating with, I think, what he's been told about Amendment 2, rather than what he knows for himself about Amendment 2. In this way, to tell you the truth, folks, Michael J. Fox is pretty typical of many of the voters who are going to go in 1 week from tomorrow and vote for Amendment 2. They haven't read it. They're basing their vote in favor of it totally on what someone has told them Amendment 2 is about. Notice that already Michael J. Fox has said, look, he's against human cloning and he's against egg farming. He just wants to include embryonic stem cell research in the whole approach to finding a cure for Parkinson's and other diseases. You might have already surmised that if he had read the content of Amendment 2, not the summary that the voters are going to see when they go in to vote, but the content of the actual proposal, he would have seen that it actually makes human cloning legal. As long as the clone, as long as the human embryo produced through somatic cell nuclear transfer is promptly destroyed for the harvest of stem cells. He's obviously unaware of this. I have no reason to think of Michael J. Fox as being cute or coy or disingenuous. He believes that Amendment 2 would ban human cloning. A lot of Missouri voters believe it too. It's not true, but they believe it because they haven't read it for themselves. He also says he's against egg farming. Now, that's a kind of a term of art, but against the sale, the production of human eggs solely for the purpose of destructive biomedical research. But if he had read Amendment 2? And it's actually written in kind of a very easy-to-understand language. If he'd read Amendment 2, he would realize that egg farming is permitted, not outlawed. But as we shall see, Michael J. Fox is not altogether familiar with Amendment 2 in its particulars.
Although I'm quite sure that I'll agree with it. In spirit, I don't know. Full disclosure, haven't read it, and that's why I didn't put myself up for distinctly. But I made this point before, and I really am sincere in it, that anybody who's prayed on this and thought about it and really considered it and can't get their mind around it or their heart around the idea of embryonic stem cell research, I'd go to war for your right to believe that and your right to feel that. I respect it. I truly do. So we're just saying, know that we have prayed on it too. And we've thought about it. And we are good people. And we are family people. And we are people that take this very seriously and are as concerned as you are.
Do you think there's any way to finally find common ground with people who do believe in the end this is tampering with tiny lives?
These lives are going to be thrown away. Anyway, they're they're marked for destruction. These thousands of frozen embryos that are a byproduct of in vitro fertilization. We have routinely, before this conversation started about stem cell research, we have for years thrown them away. And that's the other thing, you know, this idea of snowflake babies. We're in favor of that. The truth of the matter is that's only going to account for a tiny fraction of
those. Those are the embryos that are adopted and then brought
absolutely.
To term.
And who would have a problem with that? That's fantastic. But it will, in the end, account for only a tiny fraction of those eggs. And so our point is that the pro-life position is to use that, what up to this point is waste, the literal waste that's going to be thrown away, use it to save lives and to ensure lives in the future. I mean, it's...
Okay, I got to stop here. Again, another comment there that requires response. First of all, the subject turned very quickly and without any real... I don't think Stephanopoulos caught it. He probably should have caught it. The subject turned from the embryos that are the product of human cloning, which would be legalized and made impossible to regulate by Amendment 2 in Missouri, and leftover or extra in vitro fertilization embryos that are frozen at this time in vats of nitrogen. I liked George Stephanopoulos' term that he used there, tampering with tiny lives. I don't know if he wrote it or if he came up with it or if it was right off the cuff, but it's a good description of precisely what this kind of research would do. It would tamper with tiny lives. I think it's a very fair and accurate description. But we need to understand the distinction between what Amendment 2 is calling for. Amendment 2 is not asking about anything having to do with leftover in vitro fertilization embryos. What Amendment 2 is talking about is let researchers make an attempt at cloning human embryos so that we can use them for destructive biomedical research. That's what it's saying. And if it's written in the Constitution, there's not anything a voter in Missouri can do. There's not anything a lawmaker in Missouri can do. There's not anything a governor in Missouri can do. There's not anything a judge in Missouri can do to stop it from that point on. It would require another amendment of the Constitution to stop it. That's a different issue from these embryos that are the product of in vitro fertilization. The confusion between those two leads a lot of people to say, oh, I don't understand all this embryo shmembryo stuff. But if someone like Michael J. Fox, who's earnestly concerned about this issue, can be confused on it, just imagine the confusion among relatively disinterested voters in Missouri, when there's no reason for such confusion.
It's hope that's informed by the opinion of our leading scientists, almost to a point of unanimity, that embryonic stem cells, because they're pluripotent, because they have the capacity to be anything, and are truly, you know, will it be a straight path to victory? Probably not. Probably you'll have stutter steps along the way. In fact, they just did some work where they found that it actually relieved the symptoms of Parkinson's in one test, but there was some tissue residue that built up, which is not ideal. But two steps forward, one step back. You know, it's the process. It's how this country was built. It's what we do. I don't want to get too corny about it, but isn't that what that person in the harbor with the thing? It's about hope. And so to characterize hope as some kind of malady or some kind of flaw of character or national weakness is to me really counter to what this country is about.
We first talked about this 5 years ago, and you did talk about the enormous promise. Looking back 5 years later, some scientists do say that it's been a disappointment.
Well, it's been a disappointment, too, in that they haven't had a full deck to deal from. I mean, we talked in 2001, and, you know, there was talk of 60 lines. And even that was, well, 60 lines out of potentially thousands of lines. We've been limited to 60. And I remember saying that it's going to be less than that. And it turned out to be a lot less than that. And then those lines turned out to be quite polluted in some cases with mouse feeder cells. And also now it's like trying to get a good picture out of a videotape that's been recorded on over the course of 10 years.
supporters of President Bush say, wait a second, he's the first president ever to have any funding.
He's the first one who had an opportunity to. I mean, this technology didn't, he came in with it. He, you know, it didn't precede him. No one had an opportunity before him. So, you know, I don't want to characterize the president's motives or ambitions or thought process, but the outcome is obvious. It hasn't been supported. It's been limited. I mean, the very fact that the stem cell lines, we started out with limitations, not guidelines, but limitations.
And your goal now is to go out and elect candidates who will help override the president's veto?
Of any stripe. You know, that's the other notion that was put out there, was that I somehow was recruited by the Democratic Party.
Democratic shill, I think.
Democratic shill, yeah. I want to look up shill in the dictionary. I think it has something to do with supporting someone whose beliefs you don't believe in for ulterior reason or something. But, yeah, no, I'm not a shill for the Democratic Party. I approached them. I sat down to find out what candidates were pro-stem cell in races where they're opposed by anti-stem cell candidates. And I had no predisposition toward Democrats or Republicans. It'd be fine with me either way.
Now, here's something that needs to be pointed out, and that is he has contrasted candidates who are pro-stem cell with those who are anti-stem cell. And I think Jim Talent would say, this goes right back to Stephanopoulos' first question that we played for you, Jim Talent in Missouri would say he's not anti-stem cell. His concern is about a certain kind of stem cell research, namely when the stem cells are derived from human embryos that are destroyed in the process of harvesting those stem cells. That's the kind of stem cell research that he's opposed to. But the failure, and I think it's an honest failure on Michael J. Fox's part, the failure to distinguish between embryonic stem cell research and adult stem cell research, which he is aware of, and to think, well, if you're against embryonic stem cell research, you're anti-stem cell research, that failure is one, again, that seems to be pandemic in Missouri, at least among those who will unwittingly vote for Amendment 2. We cannot let the proponents of Amendment 2 deceive anyone, Michael J. Fox or the voters in Missouri, into thinking that the opponents of embryonic stem cell research are opposed to stem cell research. In fact, the strongest proponents for adult stem cell research are among those who oppose embryonic stem cell research because it is the ethical alternative to destroying human embryos. We're listening to some audio from ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos. He had a lengthy interview with Michael J. Fox, reacting to the ads that Michael J. Fox recorded and that were aired during the World Series across the nation. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's Bill, who calls from his car. Bill, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you. I was under the impression that it's fairly difficult to change the Constitution, whether it's the federal Constitution or a state Constitution, and I'm puzzled as how a vote put to the people can just change the Constitution. I mean, there must be some other process between point A and point B.
You know, you caught me there with less than adequate knowledge. In fact, I was asked this very question Saturday this weekend, Bill, by none other than a regular guest on this program, Dr. David Adams. And luckily, he asked it to me privately during lunch. But David Adams said, how is it that a simple majority in Missouri will amend the Constitution? And I thought to myself, along the lines that you're thinking, Bill, yeah, wait a minute. They've got 52%, at least the proponents of Amendment 2 have 52%. And somehow with a simple majority, we're going to amend the Constitution, generally speaking. And here's where I do not know. Please, any attorney or lawmaker who is aware of how it happens, let me know. Generally speaking, we ask for a two-thirds majority to amend a Constitution because it ought to be difficult to do. We're amending the ultimate law of the land, or at least the ultimate law of this state. So if anybody out there knows how it is a simple majority will amend the Missouri Constitution, let me know. Matt calls from Florida. Hi, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd. Bear with me for a second. I'm a little bit punchy. I've had a long night and day, as it is. I heard Michael J. Fox, and I heard you point out that, in all likelihood, he hasn't read the proposal. And
no, he admitted to having not read Amendment 2. That's fair enough.
Yeah. Okay, now, one of the arguments that I heard, I cannot remember who it was that gave this argument, They said, in order for, let me get this out right, in order for you to believe that proposal or amendment 2 is going to make somatic cell nuclear transfers legal and ban everything else, you would have to believe that there's a conspiracy of hundreds of thousands of people involved in an effort to confuse you or to lie to you or whatever. But the reality is all you need is 100,000 people to just not read what it's actually about and just go, oh, this is a good idea. This sounds good to me.
Matt, thank you very much. Let's mark that one since we said we're going to do this. That is a contender for Soundbite of the Week, if there ever was one. Thank you very much, Matt, and thanks for listening out there in Florida, smartest listeners in radio. Yeah, it doesn't require some vast conspiracy of people actively working to deceive the Missouri public. What it requires is enough people in Missouri not to read the darn thing. I read it. I guess I came late to the game in reading the thing, but I actually read it when the initiative was first being proposed. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not even really that smart when it comes to most things. I read it and I was looking for things like, you know, when will these embryos be destroyed? How do they define human cloning? Will eggs be sold under this amendment, bought and sold in Missouri? Guess what? I could even figure it out. So all it requires, as you say, Matt, thank you very much for the call and the comment, is enough voters not to read what they're voting for. We got a few more minutes here between George Stephanopoulos and Michael J. Fox.
In fact, the Republican candidate who's pro-stem cell would be someone I'd really like to talk to. And in fact, in the past, I've supported and done commercials for Arlen Specter, who is a very aggressive pro-stem cell champion. And I know that there are others, you know, that there are. There are people like Orrin Hatch and Danforth. But make no mistake, it hurts, and it hurt to see the president use the one veto of his administration to strike down this legislation. It was passed through both the houses of the Congress. That a lot of very people of very serious conscience thought about it and in their duty as representatives voted for. And to see the president, no.
He's got a little over two more years. Do you think there's anything you can say or do to change his mind?
Well, we're doing it. This is what we're doing. We're trying to elect representatives of either stripe, of either party, who will go in there and give us a veto-proof margin. And let us get on with this. It's what the people want. It's what the people deserve.
And you're campaigning next week?
Yeah, I'll be out there.
All right, that's the story between Michael J. Fox and George Stephanopoulos Sunday on ABC's This Week. Very enlightening interview as to what Michael J. Fox is aware of and unaware of, but you'll notice at the very end what the goal, at least he said the goal was in his support for these candidates in Missouri and Ohio and other states. This isn't a Missouri thing. This is a national goal. The goal is to get a veto-proof majority in the Senate. That's the goal. A veto-proof majority in the Senate so that if the president in the next 2 years or any subsequent president would want to restrict embryonic stem cell research, the production of human lives through cloning for dangerous bio and destructive biomedical research, the Senate can just knock every veto down. Kaboom. It's a national effort. It's not just Missouri. Jack calls from Kirkwood. Hi, Jack. Jack, welcome.
Hello.
Yeah. What's your question or comment?
Is this Todd?
It is.
Okay. I'm calling because we had a very issue raised at a recent congregational meeting at our church where we had Dave Minton speak to us about this particular proposal. And we didn't I'm an attorney, but I'm not a constitutional attorney. We all had a different opinion. I felt it was something like the federal law, but it's not. There's two ways. I looked it up when I got home.
Okay, good.
And I'm looking at the Constitution, revised as of March 1st, 1993, which is rather old, but I don't think it's changed since then. And it says there's two ways for it to be done in Missouri. One is by the General Assembly.
Okay.
And it would be by a majority vote.
A simple majority.
Simple majority.
Wow.
Or by a simple majority of the people in response to an initiative. And you get an initiative somehow by getting 100,000 or so people to sign a petition. And that's apparently what happened.
All right, Jack.
And it can be done by a simple majority voting on the initiative presented by these signers.
All right. Thank you very much, Jack. I appreciate you listening. I appreciate you calling with that information. That is stunning. I mean, maybe I'm ignorant about constitutional law state by state, but it strikes me that a simple majority is an awfully easy thing to get to amend the Constitution. Constitutions, by their very nature, are hard to change because if you can change them easily, they pretty much meander all over the place. If they're hard to change, you have to really get a lot of people going or run through a long process to do it. Well, there's no doubt about it. I mean, it was not a question as to whether Amendment 2 would actually change the Missouri Constitution, but it does answer the question of how it is that a simple majority, that is, any percentage over 50%, 50.0009%, would be enough. 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We got enough time here to play this story from AP on the Senate race in Missouri.
Missouri, gateway to the West and home to a Wild West shootout for Senate. Jim Talent is a Republican incumbent.
I strongly support positions of strength across the board in the global war on terror so we can defeat the terrorists who are trying to get us.
Claire McCaskill is the challenger.
We don't have ethics reform, and we have a mess in foreign policy.
While Iraq is the biggest issue in many Senate and congressional races across the United States, here in Missouri, there is a different hot-button topic. Stem cell research is front and center with both candidates on different sides of the issue. McCaskill supports an amendment to Missouri's Constitution which would allow scientists to do stem cell research in the state. She even enlisted actor Michael J. Fox for a TV ad on the issue.
I think it was real. It was in some ways raw in terms of how vulnerable he was.
But Talent is strongly opposed to the initiative.
I've opposed the ballot issue here in Missouri because it would create a constitutional right to clone the earliest stages of human life, basically the process they used to create Dolly the sheep.
The latest polls show a dead heat with McCaskill gaining over the past 2 weeks, 2 weeks that have been tough for Republicans. Iraq is in turmoil, and the Mark Foley sex scandal is still sending out shockwaves.
I'm ready for a change, and I've talked to other people, too, and they're ready for a change, too.
But some voters say they don't blame the Republican Party for its recent stumbles.
The only thing I have to do when I hear about this sex scandal of the Republicans is to think back to the three Kennedys and the Clintons.
Talent and McCaskill are both aware Missouri could be the state that decides whether Democrats or Republicans control the Senate, but neither wants to talk about it.
This race has been so intense and there's so much information about me and my opponent, I think people are going to decide about on the basis of that, whether they want me or whether they want her.
We have no hope of ever solving a problem. It's always just about which team is scoring the most points. So I'm not that concerned about who controls the Senate.
But the parties are. That's why they're both spending more than $10 million on this race. Rich Matthews, The Associated Press, St. Louis.
Well, I guess I'm not that concerned about who controls the Senate ultimately because it's going to go back and forth over time. What I'm concerned about is getting a Missouri senator that's going to add to what is Michael J. Fox calls a veto-proof majority in favor of embryonic stem cell research. We'll be right back.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.